Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Your home smart speaker up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. Jamie Noodles McLennan, Raptors Heat tonight. Get to that a little bit later this afternoon. We got Marcellus Wiley still to come. Brad Lidge will join us. And Mike Johnson coming up here in a moment. The Leafs were back on the ice, back home this morning. And Ryan O'Reilly looks like he's close. I don't believe he's slated to return, you know, tomorrow, likely not even this week. But I would think by early next week he's probably playing because he's out there before practices. He's passing, shooting, taking part in battle drills. That would suggest he's real close.
I would play him against Columbus next Tuesday, mm-hmm. a week from now. And then it's Thursday, Boston. So give him one game before the Boston game. And then I don't know, depending. I mean, he's got to kind of run the table.
Absolutely.
You've got to get him into game timing, shape, and all of that. That's when you can start to peel back other guys. But to me, if you know, I don't know if you want him to go back to back if he's not playing tomorrow. So it is. They play Saturday, Sunday, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then
they got another back to back on the weekend.
Yeah, Saturday, Sunday, and then Tuesday, Thursday. What am I? Saturday, Monday, something like that. Sorry, I'm speaking.
Yeah, early next week he'll return. Yeah. Anyway, he's not playing tomorrow night, and yet it looks as if, you know, the lineup and the lines of practice are, I think, you know, trending towards what Sheldon Keefe is probably looking at for game one. And he's got Yarncroke with Matthews and Marner, Kerfoot with Tavares and Nylander, which I know will lead to fair amount of anxiety for Leaf fans, the idea of Kerfoot in that top six, and some anxiety for Michael Bunting because he's got Bunting on a third line with Lafferty on the right side, and that's possibly where Ryan O'Reilly goes, and then I think Achari, Camp, and Aston Reese is likely going to be your fourth line. So, you know, if O'Reilly returns, that'll be interesting, like who he plays with, where he fits in. They've seen what he can do with Tavares on the left side, if it's Marner or Willie on the right side. But I think that's another part of it. When he does come back, if it's this weekend or early next week, not only get him some minutes, but get him playing with the guys you think he's going to play with, right?
Yeah.
Like that, Matthews and Tavares have played with everyone, effectively. Yarncroke, Kerfoot, Bunting, Marner, Nylander, those two guys have been here the longest. They know all these guys pretty well. I think once O'Reilly returns, you got to find him two line mates and let him get four or five games in with those two guys.
No kidding. It's kind of like training camp where you have your kind of your guys, and I don't know what they're going to be doing with load management, but it's like come game time, start getting some chemistry, and you go out there with the guys that you're going to be playing with come playoff time.
Yep.
Like, there's been a lot of moving parts, and it's understandable. They had six new bodies at the trade deadline day, didn't they?
Yeah.
So that's understandable, but it's kind of time to get it cooking.
Well, I think O'Reilly is going to start in the third line. I think it makes sense. You hope that he's up to speed. Like, he's not a speedster to start off with. You know, so it's going to be, he needs to play and get his timing back and feel good about his game. And yes, you can bleed him up. The luxury you have is you can get him up on the left side, play him wing, or push Tavares to the wing if you have to, but there's no reason to believe why you couldn't have the three down the middle and then have Kerfoot and Bunting kind of move around a little bit. I think for some reason, I don't know, and I know this would make Leaf fans frustrated, but like, I think Sheldon Keefe trusts Kerfoot.
Yeah,
he really
seems
does.
To. He said it publicly. He does. Yeah.
But Michael Bunting is interesting for me. He's a guy I didn't like the interaction the other day. I don't know if we kind of talked on it a little bit yesterday. I didn't love that interaction. I don't think he's a 10-year vet to have that type of interaction. But maybe he's closer with Keefe than we know. And again, I'm not privy to these conversations behind the scenes. Optically, it looked bad. But, he's a guy that, he's gone from first line, now it's third line, and we're going to be on a tough line energy and all of that. But, that's a guy that not that long ago was 50-point guy, 60-point guy playing shotgun with Matthew and Marner.
Yeah,
right?
Married to Matthews those two,
Marner.
Right? Like,
yes,
the belief
literally.
Was that was a line that you could almost take to the bank. Like, yeah,
yep.
They were
going
to play 80% of their shifts all year as a three-pack, and that has not happened. There have been times he's been on the fourth line to send
right.
a message, and that has become abundantly clear over the course of the season that Bunting is closer to a Kerfoot, Lafferty, type than he is to a Matthews Marner type in terms of what you can expect out of him. Like, he's one of those guys that you label as someone who can chip in and have a big moment, right? But he's not going to drive a series for you. And he, I think maybe that's a part of the adjustment to him being an everyday pro, is finding a way to contribute regardless of who you're playing with, regardless of how many minutes you're playing. And I think he probably responds to that pretty well. I mean, he's got a history with Keefe, right? Like CJ talked about it yesterday. Chris Johnson suggested it could be a positive because you play with a bit of a chip on your shoulder. Your coach is on top of you. Every player's a little bit different with the way they react to that stuff.
And if anybody, like the coach just said in that quote that Joe from the Bridge put up that Masters had, like, Keefe understands when a guy's pissed off coming back from the, like, whatever on the ice, and you go up there, I don't know. The game's changed a lot, and it's a lot different, but not everything is all rosy where it's like, hi, can I speak with you? Okay, what would you like to say? Like, that's just not what happens on an NHL bench.
Heat of battle, I get it. It's just, to me, and you can speak to it. Hayes, you can speak to it in addressing a coach. I didn't come off of a shift. If I got pulled or was sitting on the bench or whatever and had an interaction, I get it. I don't know. Is there eye contact? Should there be eye contact? Are you just listening? Are you, you know, nodding your head? Like, it just optically didn't look good. Again, it's not that big of a deal. It's not a hill I would die on.
Well, they won the game,
didn't
it. Like, it'd be different if they were losing and he was the source of it. It was, I don't know. I think, without knowing the context of the conversation, that's another thing. Right. Like the idea of guys making eye contact with the coach, that doesn't happen if it's tips, you know, like if he's just pointing out something that happened on the ice. Now, if he's railing on the guy, then I don't know. I mean, you could speak to that more than anyone else. But guys have tempers. Guys are fiery. Guys, you know, you're on the bench. It's at the end of the game. And the coach coaches everyone differently, right, based on what they feel they need.
And you can't. It's not like you can tell the coach completely off, but you can say, why don't you get off my bleeping case?
I just think there's certain guys that have the right to do it and certain that don't. That's my point. And there's a
Every year, I got more ballsy with the comments that left my mouth directed towards
the coach. Of course, as you should. Here's Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. How did you respond to your coach during the game if you weren't having a great game and he was giving it to you?
Yeah, I probably would have given the token quarter turn as though I'm sort of paying attention. But my eyes and my energy radiating, why don't you just leave me the hell alone? If you were pissed off and you didn't think you maybe deserved it, like if you know you screwed up, you would take it and just kind of take it. But if you thought it was a bit unwarranted, then you would give maybe not the full, I'm not turning around and listening, but you'd give them a little bit of the, you know, you're out of line here as well. But I think, I think you hit the nail on the head. Coach coaches everybody differently, and the best coaches know what each player needs and how they react and would say, okay, Michael Bunting and him have a combative relationship, a good one, but a combative one. It goes back many years, and I'm down between the benches. They get on, like, Sheldon Keefe gets on Michael Bunting a lot. Like, he's always kind of pushing him and driving him and correcting him and challenging him, kind of probing him to do more or be better, like every game almost. So, you know, I don't think Sheldon Keefe would take the non-turn by Bunting as a great offense, because they have these sort of exchanges all the time. It's, you know, it's not the most respectful look, and it's not totally normal, but given that it's those two and it happens all the time, they have these sort of fiery exchanges, I don't think it's a big deal at all, and I don't think Sheldon Keefe would even be insulted about what happened.
Where do you think his contract sits, Bunting and his future here in Toronto?
That's a very good question. I mean, you know, he's clearly the fifth best option offensively on the team right now. And a team that has virtually nobody signed next year beyond the big four forwards. I guess Sam Lafferty has another year on his contract, right? But they don't have anybody really there. Now, I know there is interest. I've even talked to teams around the league that like Michael Bunting. Like, they'd like him on their team. Like, they would give him term. And, you know, he's kind of proven that he's kind of a 20-goal scorer. Or maybe a bit, you know, playing with in the top six, you don't have to put him with Matthews and Marner specifically because he scored on different lines. You know, he's got 20 goal mark. He's going to be a 50 point guy again. What's that worth on a long term deal? Is that worth 6 years and I don't know, $4.5 million, something like that.
I think so, Johnny. But my question would be: is if you're signing him, he's got to be a top like you to get those points in that. Like he's been playing with some of the best players in the world. Like if you're signing him, he's not automatically going first. Is he going first power play? Is he going to play top 6 minutes? Like I think it depends on his situation. Like sometimes the grass might be greener. It's not greener on the other side because he's not instantly finding chemistry. Like, where's Matthews and Marner for him to play with on other teams?
Yeah, I get it, Noodles, but I think he's shown enough that, like, so you could put him on whatever, pick any sort of team. You could put him on Buffalo and he could play in the second or third line there. He's going to get you near 20 points and 40 goals. And the way that he plays so emotionally and he's so invested, and you know how general managers like guys who are involved in games, and give him credit that he is generally involved in games all the time. I think if he goes to market, him getting a 6-year, $24 million contract, not out of the question from somebody else. Now, the question becomes, well, that's probably more than the Leafs want to pay him. Can the Leafs get him on a discount because he loves Toronto? He's very proudly from Scarborough, and it's really important for him to play for the Leafs. Can they get him on a 6-year, 28.5? You know, because at 3.5, you don't have to score 20 goals, right? Like, if you're on the top 9, period, at 3.5, that's plenty good value. Like, you don't have to worry about how much you score. So it is a fascinating conversation. I do think, you know, like a lot of players, what happens this playoff, how he performs individually, how the team performs collectively, will go a long way in determining what direction. Because if they lose the first round again, there'll be changes on the team, and not just sort of tinkering changes. I think there'll probably be significant changes. But if they don't, then there likely won't be. And I think that's how much is riding on the first round for Bunting, for Dubas, for a lot of different people right now in Toronto.
Johnny, as far as the lines go, would you have like playoff game one matchups cooking? Like, would you be like Ryan O'Reilly when he comes back? What are you doing with him, and what kind of combinations would you like to see?
Well, I said before, I think they're going to play three centermen, right? Like, I think Ryan O'Reilly is going to be the third line centerman, with the option of loading up when necessary that Tavares can slide over and play on the wing, like they tried when he first got here. I think what you need to see, and need to see it quick, is can Ryan O'Reilly do a job with, who would it be? Maybe it's Bunting, maybe it's Kerfoot, maybe it's Yarncroke, whoever ends up, you know, being that his wingers. Can they do a job against Kucherov and Braden Point? Because to me, at 5-on-5, that's the line they got to control. Like, the power play is a whole other situation. You can't take penalties against Tampa. But that's the line that drives it for Tampa. And if Ryan O'Reilly can do that, then you're feeling really good because you can set up your other lines any way you want. If he can't, and I'm not sure he can, given how good Braden Point is right now. Braden Point's one of the best players in the league. And Ryan O'Reilly coming off a 4-6 week injury to jump in with a week left and then play that guy. So that's what I would like to see, but I got to figure it out. Like in the first period, like, is he up to the task? Is this group up to this challenge? If not, then I think Austin Matthews has to play against Braden Point, which again is fine because Austin Matthews is more than up to that challenge for sure. But that does change the dynamic of how you set up your game plan, depending on whether you can free Austin's line up to go offense more specifically or ask him to play a two-way game.
Yeah, it really is going to be a chess game here. And like Yarncroke, you mentioned, he's another guy that is signed beyond this year. He got a 4-year at 2.1. And that is what I find intriguing with the Bunting conversation. Bunting is younger. He has put up more offense this year included. But is he $2.5 million more? Is he an extra 2 years? I'm not sure. But there's a part of me that looks at their, you know, Keith's belief in Kerfoot. And if you could put a line together of Bunting with O'Reilly and Yarncroke, like, that's a good third line if they're all playing well. The problem is it opens up a hole in your top six. And, you know, assuming Kerfoot's going to be one of those guys, they, like, the drop-off after that naturally is just, it's non-existent. You're not putting Lafferty up there. You're not putting Achari up there. Obviously, Aston Reese is not an option. I don't believe Nyes is an option, you know, even though there's a lot of hype around this kid. So, I don't know. I think it could change from game one to game two to game three to game four. Like, he may change every single night.
100%. And the thing about Toronto, this year has had this sort of, you know, musical chair game up front where they've been doing a lot of different lines, a lot of different combinations. One thing I would disagree, though, Hayes, is I think you like, hey, Matthew Nyes may not be up to the task. I think he may get a look to see if he is. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because as you just said, you know, you can set up the lines in a couple different ways, but if you put that third line together, like, they need another top six winger. And, like, as Noodles has already made me admit, like, playing wing is the easiest thing to do in the NHL.
That's a straight fact.
And so, right. You know, Matthew Nyes, like, you know, can he play 10 even strength minutes with Tavares and Nylander and take preferential third line matchups? Maybe. It would be great if they did. And I think of, like, what Chris Kreider jumped right out of college. Now, Chris Kreider's a very good player. And I don't think Matthew Nyes is going to be as good as Chris Kreider, but he jumped right out of Boston College straight into the playoffs, was very good. You know, obviously, Cale Makar jumped out of the college and straight into the playoffs, but he's a different animal altogether. But I guess, again, it goes back to another part of this conversation is I think Toronto really would have enjoyed Matthew Nyes getting knocked out this past weekend. Because
yes.
It would have given them a few more games to see and maybe have a more informed decision before putting them in a spot that's totally high pressure.
With Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst. So we all accept and we all know that Boston is the clear-cut number one seed in the East and the team to beat and the team with the highest expectations going into the playoffs. Do you have a clear-cut number two in the East?
No, I don't have a clear-cut. Like, I've liked Carolina all year long, but their goaltending has me scratching my head, and Svechnikov really does hurt as well, even though I like them a ton. Jersey, great team, not a ton of experience, same goaltending issue. Rangers are playing as well as anyone. Like, I could make a case, as I am doing right now out loud, for any number of teams. And listen, I think Toronto beats Jersey or New York in a playoff series. But they're not going to get to them because they got to go through Boston, which makes the path a little bit tougher. So, I don't know. I think the other five teams, I'll throw Tampa in the mix as well. Any one of those five teams could be considered a number two, but a clear number two in behind Boston.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure there is.
I don't disagree with that. I was chatting with Steph, I think it was yesterday. She asked me, she goes, is there a sleeper in the East? And I thought to myself, like, how big of a pain in the ass are the Islanders to play against?
Big.
Like,
big.
You know what I mean? Like, they play a style that is not sexy. They make you earn everything. The goalie's good. Like, their D are more mobile than you think. Like,
I just have to back it up a second, Noodles. How come I get asked, are you going to take the garbage out in the morning? And you get asked, is there a sleeper team in the East?
I don't know. I was walking through the room and got it yelled at me, like, what, you know, in your opinion, is there a sleeper team? And I'm like, I mean, I thought, okay, maybe it's whoever sneaks in there, whether it's Pittsburgh or Florida, because maybe they're dangerous and they're kind of firing on all cylinders, kind of playing playoff hockey right in there. But then I was like, man, this Islander team is, like, how many, I've watched them quite a bit. They are gritty. Like, I don't know how you would term it, MJ, like, and you guys too. Like, it just, they are a pain in the ass to play against.
Does it have to be a wild card team, though? Like, wouldn't Jersey still be considered a wild card? I know they've had a great year, but no one saw it coming. They have zero playoff experience. They're young.
Yeah, that's
like,
a good point.
Jersey, I would label them closer to a long shot kind of Cinderella than I would a powerhouse in the East.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, obviously, given
based on their history.
Yeah, based on the lack of playoff success, I suppose. I mean, the Islanders did just make the conference final a couple of years in a row there, a couple of years back. They both play different styles. And I think this is what people, when to Noodle's point, the Islanders make the game unpleasant. And not many teams play that way anymore, right? Like, tight checking and in your face and kind of physical and don't score a lot but don't care to score a lot, rely on their goaltending, rely on their system, much like the Barry Trotz version of the Islanders used to do as well. But they have a goaltender, Noodles. I think you can make the argument Sorokin's the best goal in the league this year. Maybe not in the world, but this year Sorokin's been, as good as anybody in the league. Maybe not Linus Ullmark exclusive, but that's why it would be an unpleasant. Like, so Carolina, it's likely Carolina plays the Islanders, right? Carolina's going to come second behind Boston, likely. very likely Carolina. The Islanders get the first wild card spot. As much as I like Carolina, I hate that matchup. Like, I would love for Carolina to play Pittsburgh because I think that puts suits right in their wheelhouse. They'll just skate them into the ground. But the Islanders, who were going to have a better goaltending, can defend a little bit harder, make the game unpleasant for a smaller group. Yeah, like I'm with you. I would not want to play the Islanders, especially relative to Pittsburgh, because I think Pittsburgh for those top teams would not pose as big of a problem.
Right. It's interesting to think, because you're looking at the East, and like, I'm not lying when you go, yeah, coin flip. Like, coin flip on a lot of things. Like, Boston is, everyone, you know, the logic, and I hate this logic, it's like, well, they haven't had a dip all season, so they're due for a dip. That's not logic. That's wishful thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not logic going, well, why would they have a dip right in the playoffs? Like, maybe they will. Maybe, and you can point to,
maybe
well,
they get
Tampa,
better, though. Maybe, but they have another step to go, which would be terrifying.
Year. It just, I mean,
terrifying.
We don't even
know. You guys
know
how the playoffs go, though. Anybody can beat anybody. We're talking about an injury, a hot power play, a hot goaltender, four players that step up and play out of their mind that they've never played like before. They elevate. That can all be
four
difference
times.
Makers.
Dude, you only need four. You can have three awful games and win the series. You need four really good games.
And I would say this, Noodles, you talk about coin flip, 50-50, right?
Yeah.
So I would say the Leafs-Tampa series, the Leafs will be favored. I bet, and there's models that run this, Lowell will love the math models, but it's probably going to be 52-48 in favor of Toronto. They will be favored. But it's essentially a coin flip. And then whoever plays Boston next round, as great as Boston has been, I bet that series is not 55-45. Like, that's how tight even the best team of all time, potentially in the regular season, will not be like an 80-20 favorite. Like, not
Johnny, I think it would be 52-48 again for Boston.
Yeah, like that, 100%. Like, that's how close it is. That's how tight the margins are. And that's why it's so frustrating for teams who you can do everything right. You can, like at least last year, in many ways, outplayed Tampa. Like, in so many ways, you could talk about that they were the better team. They scored more goals. Doesn't matter when the margins are that tight. It just takes a moment or two, and those have gone not Toronto's way for several years now. But you're right, and that's what makes it fascinating. Because as great as Boston is, like, if Toronto or whoever plays, Toronto or Tampa, they won't be some massive underdog. Like, they will be right in that series with a good chance to win it.
Yeah. Yes,
well,
they will.
Boston's got to get past the first round too. Like, it's just there's no, like, that
well,
being
Tampa
said.
Didn't. Right? When they were 128 points, Tampa lost to Columbus.
Absolutely.
Right.
They didn't just lose. Yeah, exactly. They got swept.
I guess my point is you can't point to that series and go, you're expecting Boston, that happened to Boston. That's the logic I've been hearing around in this neighborhood. It's like, well, that team, you know, Boston lost. And didn't it happen to Golden State? They had that ridiculous season, and they
lost the final up 3-2 to Cleveland.
Yeah, I think they're up 3-1 in that 3-1. Series. And Draymond got suspended for game 5. You're right, Noodles, but I will say this, not that we have to bring the Leafs back into it, but it applies to the logic you're talking about, because it goes the opposite way with the Leafs, right? Because of their history. I was watching a panel down in the States, you know, a few weeks ago, and they went through 5 different analysts. Who can beat Boston? The Leafs didn't come up once because no one can picture it. Right, but you're what the Leafs can't. You can't. The Leafs can't beat them. Right. It's as if the Leafs are the. You know, they're going to finish with 89 points and sneak in.
Other than that blowout 5 or 6-1 in Toronto about 2 months ago, they've played Boston fairly well the last couple of years in the regular season.
They're a very good team. It's not like Boston will be favored, right? And I understand
it comes down to the same thing, Hayes, that you always bring up. It's because of the past.
Because of their history. Well, that's all I'm saying is the history is the Leafs can't do it. Well, that's not logical necessarily either if we're starting from scratch again.
My comeback to that would be I want to see if they can make it there. Like that, because that would be a round 2 matchup, which nobody has seen. Yep. So
that's true.
That would be my logic sitting on those panels. Is
Noodles,
like
people are getting their gifts ready. Like they're just sitting in a file, getting ready to hit send.
Oh yeah, the archives are loaded.
No,
loaded with leaf gifts.
Here's my other gift, the counter gift to that, guys. Johnny, tell me if I'm right with this. If the Leafs beat Tampa, won't the headline be plenty of respect in the handshake line this time around? Do you not think that will be?
So there'll be some respect handshake reference, absolutely.
Right, right.
you know, there'll be all kinds of stuff. I mean, if they lose one game, what's that give? Everything's fine in here when the guy's sitting there on the table and the fire, the house is on fire. Like, it's all going to be ready to go. But it's like, it was funny. I was talking to my daughter and she's like, can you get tickets to the playoff games? Like, I don't know, whatever. But we're talking about, like, if you were able to go to Toronto in game 7 or game 5 and they were to win, like, this city would celebrate like they just won the cup. Like it would be such a, like, a pent up explosion of joy that they actually finally got it done. And then you wonder, do they take that momentum and that freedom and that dropping the weight of the burden and then be that much better? Or somehow are they going to be like, we did it, we're satisfied, and then maybe feel a little too content with themselves? It'll be fascinating to see, but I mean, like Noodle says, like, they got to get there first. And then
got to play the games. That's the thing.
They got to play the games.
And that's the only reason.
That's been there 3 years in a row, right? Three years in a row. Like, Tampa's going to make you earn it. Even if Tampa's not as good and they're not, they're going to make you earn it to get through them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It'll be fun. I think it's going to be fun. But
3 weeks tonight.
Stressful.
Oh, it's going to be stressful. Yeah, it's for all six teams in the playoffs, right? Like, the same logic applies to basically every series. And we were saying this early, Johnny, like, the West has been inferior all year. I believe that it still remains that way. But you look post-deadline, Colorado's red hot, Minnesota's red hot, the Kings are the hottest team in the league, Edmonton's winning a lot of games. Like, it's
the Pacific.
It's going to get cooking.
Up on you, Hayes.
Yep.
Like, Vegas, L.A., and Edmonton are all, like one or two losses in the last 10 games.
Right.
They all of a sudden have more points than Toronto and Tampa. This idea the East was so much better has sort of, by this point anyways, has sort of drifted towards parity. In fact, maybe Toronto's division not quite as strong as the Pacific, or maybe in the Central as Colorado is surging as well. So, I think the 2-3 matchup, and this is, I kind of like this, I'm not going to go down the playoff matchup road or the playoff formula, but the fact that it's going to be, you know, right now, Dallas-Colorado 2-3. It's going to be LA-Edmonton 2-3. Ooh. It's going to be Jersey Rangers 2-3. It's going to be Toronto Tampa 2-3. Like, those are all good series with good LA Edmonton. Like Edmonton, everyone thinks it's McDavid, it's his time. I don't know if they're favored against LA. That's how good LA is playing with a goaltender now. Toronto's not alone in sort of the pressure of, like, we're good, but, like, we don't have any sort of luxury in the first round of thinking that we're much better than the team we're playing. Good Stanley Cup winning capable teams are going home. Probably four of them in the first round in that 2-3 matchup.
Can't wait. Yeah, we're 3 weeks away, and then it is go time. We'll leave it there, Johnny. We'll do it again later in the week.
All right, boys. Have a good evening.
Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota, and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory arriving daily. It's time to Toyota. Visit MapleToyota.com. Yeah, the playoffs are going to be a thing of beauty. They always are. The Stanley Cup playoffs are a thing of beauty, and it will be, not everyone will be breathing easy and having a good time.
Yeah.
And that's all you can expect, right?
There won't be any stress or what's the irrational thoughts or anything. Like, it'll just be all smooth sailing. Can you imagine if there's, like, a polarizing call, too? Like, that call we were talking about the other day, that call, like, what was it? Intended
call. In
Carolina,
the intended whistle or
intended whistle
continuation
or whatever
that was.
Like, I'm praying. I can't look at Duthie or Hayes or you, Noodles. I can't do it after a loss. I can't come up with something different if it happens again. Like, I'm dreading the night if something bad happens, Duthie saying for the sixth consecutive year, you think there'll be changes next year?
Mm-hmm.
I'll pass out on the desk. Like, I'll pass out.
Is this year 6 or year 7?
I don't know. Whatever it is,
this
man.
Is their seventh year in a row. But the first year against Washington, everyone knew that was house
money. They lost in 6, didn't they?
They lost in 6. There were a bunch of overtime. That was actually maybe the most entertaining series.
We were at that game. Where were the three of us?
Absolutely. They lost 2-1. Remember, Matthews tied it late, like, off the stanchion. The place went nuts. It was like a Monday night. And then they lost in overtime. And anyway, it doesn't matter. But that was 7 years ago. And you talk about optimism. I remember leaving the building thinking, this team's going to win a cup in the next 3 years. They haven't won a series 6 years later.
A series, dude.
Let's not get crazy. That's just a straight fact. That's not a take. I mean,
that's just
a fact, man. I'm just telling you the honest truth. Yeah. So, yes, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. That's the beauty of the playoffs, is you don't have to worry about contracts and salary caps and you know, formats and all that kind of stuff. You drop the puck and let's see who wins.
But that is kind of, Hayes, what I thought the trajectory was going to be. It's like 22, 23-year-olds, maybe they don't get it done. And then it's like maybe a first-round exit again, and then maybe they go a couple rounds, and then maybe it's like
–
It's like they kept climbing the ladder. Maybe they got to a final, and then they just they lost in the first round. I don't know. I thought the trajectory was going to be a lot different.
Yes, and it has not been. And meanwhile, it's been Tampa. It's been Boston. You know, outside of the Columbus and Montreal ones, which again we don't have to revisit that. But it's, you know, they run into tough opponents and they haven't got the job done. And the same thing's going to apply this year. You know, throughout the East, there are no layups. There will not be a layup.
Yep.
Raptors Heat tonight. Get you an update on the lineup. Who's going tonight? It sounds as if Jimmy Butler will not play tonight. So Butler's got a neck injury. It sounds as if he is out, which has the potential to be a massive benefit for the Raptors. And Kyle Lowry will play, but he's still on a minutes restriction. So how much will he play? We'll find out. Marcellus Wiley still to come. Brad Lidge in about an hour. Opening week for the Jays and Major League Baseball. We'll get to that at 6:30. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Marcellus Wiley in about a half an hour on Lamar Jackson wanting out. Aaron Rodgers ghosting the Packers. Andy Reid having no idea who Jordan Love is.
And if you want any evidence that Lamar Jackson should have had an agent or should get an agent, with his MVP, compare his career earnings to Josh Allen's in Buffalo's, because somebody put up the board today, and it's like $87 million for Allen, $33 for Lamar, or $25 it might be. And you're just thinking, this is not adding up. So you want to be a cool guy and save a few bucks here and there with no agent? Great, but check the numbers. It's outrageous.
Listen, when Lamar plays, he wins.
Yeah.
And at that position, if you're a winning quarterback, if you're a guy that plays the style that he plays, yes, it is unique, but it is thoroughly entertaining. I don't know the longevity of that success, but I would say the same thing applies with Josh Allen. We heard Sean McDermott say it this week. He gets hit way too much, like way too often. Right. He's a lot bigger than Lamar. Like, he is a beast. Josh Allen is a big dude. But I don't know if he stays healthy, you know, for the next 5 years. There it is up on TSN 4, career earnings. Ross Tucker tweeting that out. Josh Allen, 85 sheets. Lamar, $33 million. They were both drafted in the first round of the same draft.
And one guy's won an MVP. And the
thing it's
is,
Lamar. Hayes, it's not Josh Allen.
Thank you very much. And Noodles, we've seen it a bunch of times in pro sports. Hazy, you've seen it in different sports other than hockey. When you have a high-quality agent and there's a high-quality piece of talent, they move the asset. Like, they're saying, we got to get you out of there, whatever. When you're by yourself, it doesn't happen. And he's proving it in real-life time right now.
It's crazy.
A big-time agent gets that transaction done. End of story. It's over with and done. I'm convinced of it anyway.
I agree with you.
I lived it. I lived it when I had a good agent, but then I switched to a super agent. And it's just different. Like, it's just a different.
They make things happen, man. They're business playmakers, is what they are.
Because nobody messes with the top tier super agents, because they've got so many people, they've got so much power. You're gonna mess with an agent over a second tier player. Well, guess what they're gonna do on a different contract? Mm-hmm. That agent will get you. Like, to me, I've always felt, and you guys know, I switched to Newport. You know, Pat Morris, who's a dear friend, but he also is a great agent. Like, they get stuff done, and you don't get messed with, because, you know, at that time he had Cujo and Chris Pronger, and you name it. Like, there was big names on their roster, so they're not going to mess with a guy.
No, it demands respect. It demands respect is what it is, because if you're a GM in the league, you know at some point you have to work with that agent, and you might need to call up that agent and say, can you sell your guy on the idea of coming here, right? So that's really ultimately what it comes down to. And I think this is actually going to be more difficult for Lamar Jackson, is the idea of orchestrating a trade out of there without an agent. I think it'll be even more difficult than actually orchestrating a contract negotiation in Baltimore, because of everything you just said. What ends up happening now in pro sports generally is teams grant players permission to go seek out the deal. That's not Lamar doing it. That's his agent calling and working it out. And Ken Francis isn't going to be able to do that because Kenny doesn't have a clue what the hell he's doing.
Rick
Francis. Dude, it's not
Rick
a real Francis. Person.
It probably isn't even a real person. It might be ChatGPT, a.k.a. Ken Francis, or it's Lamar disguising his voice and trying to, you know, activate some sort of negotiation or offer sheet.
You don't think if Drew Rosenhaus, I mean, I don't know
name
how
any of the big boys. Any of the big boys.
Drew Rosenhaus is kind of like the hot shot, kind of big mouth NFL agent. I don't know any other like top quality ones, but you're telling me if that guy wasn't his representative, he would have made a play and this would have been resolved.
Yep.
And that number on that tweet that Joe from the Bridge just put up would not say $25 million and Josh Allen 87. I guarantee it.
Yes. And even if he's taking $5 million of that difference, you're still making 87 instead of 33.
No kidding, dude.
If you're making 82 instead of 33, do the math. Even if you got to give $5 million cash to the guy who brokered the deal, it's still worth it for you in the end.
Agreed.
And it's too bad, man, because Lamar Jackson, he's an easy guy to like. He's one of the most entertaining players in the league. And he's young. He's in his mid-20s. And when he plays, he wins ball games. A lot of that is he's in the right position. Baltimore's a really good team.
There's something up with him because these teams aren't stupid. And on most other circumstances, somebody would have made a play and snatched him out of there. So there's something up where they know something where somebody's not pulling the trigger on it. And I don't know what it is. It might be an injury. And that's the only thing I can think of because his rare talent speaks for itself.
Absolutely. And the nature of the position, the desperation at that position is crazy.
You're telling me the Colts wouldn't be so desperate to say, we've got to make a play for this guy?
Well,
something's up.
There's a lot of people in the NFL world, a lot of analysts, a lot of people tapped in, players, GMs, coaches, advocating for the Jets going to get Lamar Jackson over getting Rodgers because he's younger. He's more predictable in terms of his headspace and where he's at.
Ridiculous comment that they're committed to Aaron Rodgers, which is insane.
Right. They are speaking as if he is in New York right now.
As a guy in management.
I've never seen that.
It might be kind of a backstabbing play, but you have always got to be able to pivot to plan B and say, actually, you know what, Aaron? Mm-hmm. We don't want you. We can go get Lamar, who's younger, and we can have him for a longer duration, and we like his natural talent ability more. But they're just like, no, it's not an option.
Leverage with the Packers, right? Like, we're fine. We'll go somewhere else if you're not willing to accept our deal. The Packers don't have another option. Rodgers isn't playing anywhere else. It's New York or retirement, probably.
Yeah.
So that's the dance between leverage, and that's why I guess it's a foregone conclusion it's going to happen. But Gutekunst, the GM in Green Bay, was saying, like, they're trying to reach out to Aaron Rodgers. He's ghosting them. They're paying him $58 million cash, and you can't get a text.
That's bad. That's bad business on
so
Aaron
unprofessional
Rodgers.
And
it
so goofy.
Really is. But I mean, according to Andy Reid, Jordan Love will be fine. So
Andy Reid's biggest Jordan Love's biggest fan is Andy Reid. You want to hear the GM of the Packers talking about? You can hear his frustration with the interaction in the offseason with Aaron Rodgers.
I didn't really take his comments like that, and it's certainly not true. I mean, I think, you know, as we got out of the off season or after the season, and we had a good conversation, and then, you know, we're going to have some follow-up conversations. And our inability to reach him or for him to respond in any way, I think at that point, then we just kind of had to, I had to do my job and kind of reach out and understanding that a trade could be possible and see who was interested. But that shopping was never really part of that. That's not a necessity, but at the same time, you know, the value of the player is he's a premier player, you know, so I think getting premier picks back for that is important.
The fact that he is on the record saying that in front of media members, like, we just couldn't reach this guy. He's been here for 18 years. He's going to likely have a statue outside of Lambeau. His number's going up
in
the rafters.
The money they've given him. The money.
Yeah. They've paid him a fortune. They reworked his deal so that it's fully guaranteed. He's going to make $58 million this year. And this guy can't pick up the phone or even respond with a text saying, guys, I'm not interested. How about that?
That's the one thing about the industry that drives me nuts. It's like, it's not like somebody dissed you, man.
No.
You know what I mean? It's just they've basically handed you everything you could ever ask for.
and in return, you couldn't show up and help young kids out, and you couldn't do this, and you couldn't do that, and now you're trying to jam them up. I just don't get that.
That's why I'm not convinced it works in New York, because I'm not convinced he has an attitude that will be adjusted between Green Bay and New York.
Well, Brian, the fascinating thing is, aren't the Jets looking at the guy's behavior and saying, why do we want this problem?
That's how desperate they are.
I get that's it. I understand the talent that's involved here, but don't they look at the other stuff and say,
they should.
What kind of person are we actually dealing with here?
They should.
But that's why people that are running pro sports teams are completely stupid.
Listen,
and I have no idea why they get those jobs.
That was at the essence of the Deshaun Watson situation. Completely different context, clearly. But the Browns were so desperate, they put blinders on and said, screw it.
Yeah,
we don't care. You know, we'll pay the price and we'll give them guaranteed money and we'll deal with the, you know, the blowback.
Yeah, and we're going to deal with the blowback for 2 years and it's going to be real ugly, but we're willing to
do it. Yeah. New York's doing the same thing.
You're right. But if you're good enough, teams will move heaven and earth to have you, or they'll make excuses for you. But the minute that you're not good enough, believe me, they will kick you in the ass.
Jamie, if you are good enough, things blow over. Look at the GOAT in golf. Did anyone ever think that he would get over the wife scandal and him getting pulled over and being gooned up in his car? For most guys, that might be game over.
Well,
but when you're the GOAT and you're Tiger Woods, you just overcome it, man.
Mm-hmm. He's had... we'll call it a few incidents, correct?
Like, he said many lives. He is a cat, after all.
Like, most guys, that is game, set, match. You're never heard from again.
Now, he lost sponsors, but there were a couple. Like, Nike never left him. Nike never left him.
Because they're printing money because of him.
Of course they are.
Think of all the golf people. Like, you guys, I guarantee you, bought Nike Tiger shirts and Tiger... you know, shoes and all of that. Like, they print money because of him. They weathered the storm.
He's a poster boy. Yeah, he's a poster boy.
Exactly. They weathered the storm, and he's come out the other end, too.
Jerry Player. I don't recall him being sponsored by any major...
And by the way, what happened with Jerry Player is last year in the ceremonial tee-off with Jack and Lee Elder...
Mm-hmm.
The son was trying to promote golf balls behind the scenes on the tee.
Yes.
That's what that goon was doing.
And he got banned for life, I think. And that's why Gary Player's all bent out of shape.
Right.
Because
so this guy was on there. I don't know what he was doing, like trying to show the balls in the background, or I don't know.
What a greasy little animal that guy
is. I know. Like, what an idiot. Your dad's Jerry Player, and you're trying to promote some kind of golf ball.
Yeah.
Like,
put it off.
Yeah.
Put it off.
Put it off.
Put it off.
We have a pair of Leaf tickets to give away. Leafs, Habs, the final home game of the season, April 8th. That's a beauty. We're giving away clues to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player every day this week. And on Friday, you'll have a chance to call and name that Leaf. Today's clue. This Leaf has been traded twice during his NHL career. This Leaf has been traded twice during his NHL career. There's your clue for today. All right, Marcellus Wiley still to come. Brad Lidge on the Jays opening Thursday in St. Louis. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.
Do you guys think that Eldrick Tiger Woods shows up at Augusta National and says, I think I can win this week?
Of course.
Because I can't hear it again.
There's no bigger lock in sports than him saying... And
doesn't he come to and say...
No, never. At no point
a lot of good things would have to happen.
No,
and
never.
I'm getting a little bit fatigued of, I think I got a real good... No, you don't. You don't. Like, it would be a miracle for him to win again, especially on that golf course. You can't not be able to walk, not golf, and show up at that track and do it. No way.
Well, so it's a zero... If we were doing a Jerry's, you're a 0%.
I'm actually zero right now. Sorry, J-Mac.
Zero that he can win?
Yeah.
I don't think it's zero because of the course and the way he knows how to play it. And I thought he actually looked pretty good at Riviera. I did. He played better than I thought. He made the cut. That track is tougher than Augusta, and he played it incredibly well. Not incredibly well, but based on what I had expected out of him, he exceeded my expectations. It's it's like 5%, like maybe 5%. But you know the way this is going to go. Every press conference with him is a carbon copy. You talk about the screw job grin or whatever. The, you know, right. I don't remember who you referenced recently that puts the grin on the.
Colin Montgomery.
Monty yeah. used to do it.
People. He's like, hi, how are you?
Tiger does the same thing. Tiger gets up on that podium and everything's giggles and everything's good times. One media member has the audacity to actually ask a real question and grill him. And then he gets bent out of shape, and I'm not going there. He doesn't offer anything up.
No,
it's the same thing every time. Ah, I wish I could do this. Ah, I wish I could do that. No, but I wouldn't be here, guys, if I didn't think I could win. That's what he's going to say.
It's the same thing every single time. Back at my home club, I'm shooting 64.
Yeah, I can do it all.
But I'm in a cart.
Yeah, that's coming up too. I can do it all back home, but I just, you know, can I walk? Can I do it over 4 days?
And then the classic follow-up comment is, I don't show up here if I didn't think I could win.
Yep, that's a lock, man. Well,
he's
doing
that. He's doing all of that. I'm telling you.
Of course
he is.
It'll
be awesome.
The question is, will Mickelson say the same thing? That's a better question.
Dude, I haven't seen him hit a golf shot in 2 years.
Yeah, Phil is not in a good place right now. Phil is not in a good place.
Dude, he has problems you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, he does.
That's a 0%.
I do believe. That's a 0%. Phil has 0%. 0% chance.
I'd actually give Phil more of a chance than Tiger,
Stop
to be honest
it.
With you. I
Stop
swear
it.
To God.
Stop
Phil
it.
Shows up at Augusta National, and that guy can hit that slider fade and watch yourself.
No, he can't.
100 bucks, he finishes higher than Tiger.
Done. There you go. Lock it in. Pinky swear, everything you want. Hour three coming up. Marcellus Wiley and Brad Lidge. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.